Welcome to Rise With Certainty, the podcast. My name's Jessica Marie. I am your host. I'm a women's empowerment coach, spiritual business mentor, wealth coach, and manifestation queen. And we are here to bring you the conversations that will expand your mind and allow you to step into the best version of you yet. Everything you hear in this podcast, it's designed to expand you in ways that you haven't experienced before. This is where we do things differently. And remember, anything is possible. Hello, everyone. I am super excited to welcome back to an exciting guest podcast. Today, I've got the fabulous Danielle on today, and we're going to talk about something that, I mean, Danielle's had heaps of experience with, and I've heard heaps of conversations around, which is plant medicine and ayahuasca. Hello, Danielle. Welcome.
Oh, hi, beautiful. Thank you for having me. I'm so excited.
I'm so excited that Danielle, like, you and I just, I feel like soul sisters. As soon as we met, I was like, hi, I want to be friends with you.
Can we share that story, actually? Because it really was. We were sitting at Kula, which is like this little cafe in Pisac, and I was sitting there doing my work. And literally, like, it felt like a whisper coming from the side. But it was like, hello. I was like, is someone talking to me? And I just see you. You're like, hi. And it was just, it was so insane because we chatted for a second. But then I can't remember. I think, like, I had to leave or you had to leave. Something happened. So it was like we connected pretty quickly on Instagram. And then you messaged me afterwards being like, you, I think you know my friend Jackie who lives in Australia. I was like, wait, what? Like, what are the chances of that? Oh my God. And then we realized that the place, so I lived in Australia for 2 years, a couple years ago. And the place that I actually lived and worked for like a year and a half, Krishna Village, is where you recently did your yoga teacher training.
Literally, yeah. Like the place that transformed my whole entire life. Like that changed everything. And you're like, yeah, I worked there right before you went there. I was like, no way.
It's actually like the place that changed a lot for me too. I mean, Krishna Village was a catalyst for me to really like start to move more down this spiritual path. So, you know, there was a lot that happened before. And of course, there's been so much that's happened after. But yeah, Krishna Village, I think for a lot of people is like a space of transformation.
I mean, I literally quit my full-time job, went straight there and then decided I'm never working in a job again. Like it doesn't get more pivotal than that. Super transformational. So was that the kind of start of your journey into this space, the pivotal turning point?
Going to Australia was, yeah. Like, so this was back in 2017. And for me, it was like an absolute just shit hit the fan. I hope my language is, it's okay if I share that. Everything happened all at the same time. Like, you know, when they say bad things come in threes, now when I look back on it, I realize that it wasn't actually bad because perspective is so different. But at the time, it very much was this feeling of like everything that could have happened all happened at the same time. So like absolute relationship breakdown, career breakdown, emotional breakdown, just all of it happening right at the same time to the point where, and I think it had to, like I needed that much pain. I needed that much suffering for me to actually be willing to make the shifts that I needed to make because otherwise I was just too stuck in my comfort zone. So it was like, that was the catalyst that was needed. And from there, I just was ready to leave and to make new choices, take a new direction. And Australia had been coming up for me so much. It was like this little seed that had been planted over and over again. So I made the choice to go to Australia. It was like, oh, I'll travel for 6 months and then come back. And then I ended up being in Australia for 2 years. And yeah, it was like living on a barge in the middle of the river and then going to another yoga retreat. And then Krishna Village was like that kind of big, big piece that really shifted everything. Yeah.
Oh my gosh. Yeah. It's so compounding, isn't it? It's like you inch your way into like, bam. And the land of that space is super, like it's so indigenous, like Mount Warning in Northern.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, we could get into like some very wooey conversations or that, but there is something really powerful and really potent spiritually about that land. And like you said, the fact that it was like a volcano, or is it still an active volcano?
No, it's not active.
Okay.
We don't have that in Australia.
Yeah. But it was, and there's definitely something to that energy. And I felt that, I don't know about you, did you camp when you were there?
Yeah.
Okay.
I did. 6 weeks and it was the best time ever.
Oh my God, because there's something so powerful too about being that close to the land, where when you're living in a tent, you're like as close as you could possibly be to the earth without just like sleeping in the dirt.
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. I think that there was something to be said about that also.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's beautiful. It wasn't even an option. I was like, yep, I'm bringing it. I think I bought a tent just for that. And yeah, it's such a trend. It is a transient place. It really calls people in for that next level of transformation, which is, I mean, no expert in it, but that's what I believe the Indigenous men would do. It was like for ceremonies, for big release, like people come there to do the same thing. So I'm not surprised at all that was your longest and final destination in Australia before you came back and conquered this new chapter.
Yeah. Yeah. I think there's something to be said too for like collective energy of a space.
Oh,
and
God.
Because like you said, it is a transient place where a lot of people pass through on their spiritual journeys and big shifts happen while they're there. That kind of energy is collected and it's held in that space. And so it just furthers that for the next people that come. So yeah, it's like so powerful.
Yes, super powerful. So we spoke just before, and I know you said like it's evolving and everything, but I think it's what you say you do or where you've come from, and that we're going to revolve this entire podcast about really. So yeah, it's really, to me, it's really interesting. Rare to meet people that have done what you do.
Oof, yeah. So I guess I'll give like a little bit of background of what I've been doing recently, because I know we're going to touch on some of that. And then maybe I can share some of like what the future holds.
Maybe.
We'll see. We'll see. But yeah, so all of last year, so all of 2022, I lived and worked at an ayahuasca and plant medicine retreat in the Sacred Valley of Peru. So worked as a facilitator, which means that I was essentially like holding the space in ceremony with the shamans. So I am not a shaman, but holding space with the shamans, taking care of the guests who were in the space of ceremony, singing in ceremony also, and kind of holding that space when the shamans needed to take a break from their Icaros, which are like the sacred medicine songs. There was that kind of role in the space of the ceremony itself. And then also just leading and kind of guiding a lot of the different activities that we had at the center also. So we did yoga, we did breath work, we had like art therapy, which was led by this amazing guy, Theo, and group like integration, group sharing after all of the ceremonies, and then just being with the guests that were there. There was a good amount of free time for them to process and integrate, you know, whatever it was that had been coming up in the ceremonies. And so just kind of being there in the space for them when they needed it, when they just needed somebody to talk to or somebody to listen. And we did work with other medicines also. I mean, ayahuasca was the main one, but we had a session with Huachuma or San Pedro, which is like the cactus medicine. And then we also worked a little bit with Jape, which is like a sacred tobacco medicine. And Bufo, which is toad medicine. So that's 5-MeO-DMT. That was optional, but that was like a additional kind of medicine that guests could work with if they wanted to.
Wow. And so how long did guests stay at a time?
Yeah, it was like anywhere between, so it was a week minimum. We worked on a week by week basis. Mm-hmm. So guests would come in on a Sunday. Yeah, Sunday. And then they would leave on that Saturday morning. They could then go to Machu Picchu. That was like the optional kind of day trip. But it was a standard week. And then some guests would choose to stay for 2 weeks. Sometimes I rarely saw guests stay for like 3 or even 4 weeks. But I would say on average, it was like 1 to 2 weeks.
Wow. It's so deep. I know we've been having so many. I'm super excited to bring this conversation to the table. Because you and I have had so many deep conversations about this and our opinions and beliefs around ayahuasca. And I mean, I don't want to say it's trending, but I definitely hear a lot about it, especially coming from Australia. And I don't think people are so educated in the holistic realm of it. Like, there is so much more than take ayahuasca and it'll solve your depression and like you'll be happy for the rest of your life. Like, there is yes, it's a tool, but there is so much depth to it. And yeah, I'm really excited to get your insight, having experienced so many different people for so long and like people staying for a week to 4 weeks. And I mean, you would have had such a vast experience with all these different people and the medicine. Yeah.
Actually, now that I think about it, do you mind if I share for anyone who might not know what ayahuasca is?
Yeah. Yeah.
Do a really, really quick breakdown of that. It's so easy for me to forget because I've been so immersed in this world for so long, but I know that there are people who are like, what?
Yeah.
So a super, super quick breakdown. So ayahuasca is actually the word ayahuasca can have different meanings because ayahuasca can be the brew that is actually what we are drinking in ceremony, but ayahuasca can also be the vine, right? So the brew of ayahuasca that most of the time people are talking about when they're having an ayahuasca ceremony is made with the chacruna leaf and the ayahuasca vine. And so there's actually two plants that are brewed together to make the ayahuasca brew. And that is what is like drank in the space of ceremony. And the, I would say like the most common countries that this is used in, but also that it actually like comes from in terms of indigenous use would be the ones surrounding the Amazon basin. So you have like, obviously Peru, we have like Colombia, Bolivia, Venezuela, Brazil. I think those are the five main ones, mm-hmm. like around this area of the Amazon basin. So the tradition can vary depending on, you know, what country it's coming from and how they've worked with the medicine. But yeah, in general, it is done in the space of ceremony. Oftentimes it's at night, although there can be day ceremonies. And the shamans themselves. So we worked where I worked. We were partnered up with Shipibo shamans. And so what is like really, really integral in the space of an ayahuasca ceremony with Shipibo shamans is the fact that they have done what's called dietas, and this is how they've learned to work with the spirit of the medicine.
Mm-hmm.
So dieta is, you know, the shaman themselves going and being in isolation in the jungle. They're in like a little hut, essentially for months at a time, like could even be 6 months. And yeah, complete isolation, really, really little food. So maybe some rice, maybe some plantains, like maybe some fish and water.
Mm-hmm.
But other than that, they are doing whatever they can to work with the plant that they are dieting. So it could be that they're consuming it. It could be they're drinking a tea. It could be that they are even bathing in it. And the more that they work with this plant, the more that the plant spirit essentially gives them the information that they need to then hold in the space of ceremony. So it's almost like downloads that they're receiving from these plants.
Yeah.
And in turn, this turns into the Ícaros. And the Ícaros are like the sacred songs that they sing in ceremony. So the Ícaros are a really, really big piece of the ceremony, at least for the Shipibo shamans. And the idea is, it's not that they even consciously know what they're singing. It's not like a memorized song that they are just singing in the space of ceremony. It is literally the channeling of the plant spirits coming through in that space. So oftentimes when you ask a shaman, like, oh, could you just sing me an Ícaro, like in the middle of the day, they would say no because they're not connected to that space the way that they would be in the ceremony, like when they've actually drank the ayahuasca.
Interesting.
Yeah.
That's mm-hmm. super interesting. And so you think that forms part of the healing. So what is that culture? Because you mentioned that there's different cultures and they all work with it differently. So I guess in mm-hmm. the Peruvian culture, what is it that you have learned about it that helps with the healing process of the ayahuasca? Because obviously it happens all over the world. And then you have such deep importance being here. Right.
Yeah. Oof. It's such an interesting conversation when we dig into, you know, ayahuasca being used in different parts of the world. And there's of course going to be this conversation around like should, which I always like, I never like to really go into the shoulds, but like if it needs to be used traditionally versus non-traditionally in the countries that it came from versus in, you know, now ayahuasca is being spread all over the world. And so there's a really, really interesting conversation being had around like the pros and cons of that, because of course, there's something to be said for this kind of medicine being accessible mm-hmm. to people who really might feel that they need it, but maybe they can't come to Peru, or maybe they can't make their way to South America for various reasons. And so there's something to be said for that conversation. Yes. And then there's both sides. I understand also the conversation around like the importance of the medicine being held sacredly in the space that it comes from, and also like supporting the indigenous people who live in the countries where ayahuasca is actually grown, where like mm-hmm. its birthplace is, which is the Amazon. So I don't have that answer. I can see both sides. And the thing that's really interesting as well is, even if you ask Shipibo shamans, you're going to get both sides. You're going to get different opinions. And so I never really feel that there's like one set answer to things like this.
Yeah.
I think the most important thing when we get into these types of conversations is just like, what is the intention behind it? So what is the intention for the person who's going to work with the medicine? What is the intention for the shamans who maybe are bringing this medicine to other countries, or, you know, retreat centers? Like, I just think that's what it all boils down to, is the intention pure? Is it coming from a space of love and integrity? And if the medicine is being taken outside of, you know, some of these more indigenous countries, like, how can we then bring back support to those communities that it's being taken from, and just kind of have it be more like full circle?
Yeah. Oh, I'm really glad that you said that perspective, because honestly, I was a bit black and white there for a minute. I mean, I've came to Peru.
Yeah.
So it is hard, especially from Australia, like very expensive. It takes a very long time, and not everyone's privileged to have the time freedom, the financial freedom right now to access this. And it's like, yeah, it's so great that the medicine is able to be available to people that do need it at the same time. Like, mm-hmm. My mind is opened.
I think that that's the most important thing, is just having an open mind about it. Because again, it's like, I don't have that answer. I really don't. I can share my thoughts, and I can share like what I kind of believe from seeing all these different perspectives. Yeah. But who knows? And maybe even a year from now, I would have a different opinion. So it's like, yeah, kind of have to be open to it. Yeah.
And you know what? I think that like actually is such a good statement for not even this episode, but like this podcast and every podcast you hear. It's like, we can only share the opinion or the knowledge we have in this exact moment. And like, yeah, next week we might gain knowledge that changes every belief before that. And it's like, that is part of the spiritual journey. That's part of the personal mm-hmm. growth journey to go, I know what's best right now, but I don't know what's best in 50 years, or I can't give you the answer because no answer really exists.
Yeah. I think it's like something that a lot of people are afraid of in the spiritual space is, oh my gosh, if I change my views or I change my opinions, then people are going to judge me because I used to believe so strongly this thing. Yeah. And maybe I shared and I spoke up around this topic, and now I've evolved and I've changed and I have different viewpoints. But it's like, of course we're going to shift and evolve and have different thoughts and beliefs as life progresses. And we have to be okay with that, and kind of come like approach that from a space of non-judgment for others and for ourselves. Like, that's just, yeah, it's super, super important.
Yeah. So what is, you mentioned the dieta in the shamans, but I know that people do the dieta as well, right?
Yeah.
Like, what is the benefit of doing the dieta, and how does that assist in the healing process of ayahuasca? Because you can do it without it as well.
Yeah. So it is totally optional that somebody could go and work with ayahuasca or work with some of these medicines without doing the dieta themselves. And I would say more often than not, that's the case, because most people don't have a month or 3 months or 6 months to actually be in the process of a really strict dieta. But the people who I have seen go through that process, more often than not, it's just coming from the space of they feel very strongly that they want to commit themselves to like a relationship with that medicine. And sometimes people are doing it because they see themselves being in the field. Like, it's not necessarily that they want to be a shaman, but maybe they want to work with plant medicine. They know they want to be a facilitator. They know that they want to be in that kind of healing space. And so it's like a commitment to working longer term with the medicine. But sometimes it's just about people like being in that space of healing for a dedicated amount of time as well. And I think that it's more of a calling than anything. It's not like a one is better than the other. You need to do a dieta. It's really not required. I never did a dieta because I knew and I had the option. Like it was presented to me. It was available to me. But I knew that my intention was not in the right space for why I would have been doing it.
Mm-hmm.
And at the time that it was offered, it was like, if I do this dieta right now, I'm only going to be doing it because I feel like I should, or because other people are doing it, or my coworker is doing it. The intention wasn't pure enough for me to like commit myself to that mm-hmm. in the moment. And I also felt that I was gaining so much from being in this space that I was already in. Like it didn't need to be more than what it already was.
Okay.
So I just think when it comes to dieta, it's a commitment. Like it really is. It's like you committing to the time to working with specific plans. So it can be really, really powerful for people who know they want to just like go even deeper, but it's not necessary.
Yeah. You said something that kind of landed for me. Like it's the same with ayahuasca and all plant medicine. Don't just do it because you think you should or because other people are doing it. Do you believe it's important to have the call before you do it?
I mean, yes. I'm so opinion-based, by the way. Like,
exactly.
Exactly. Like, all of this is. I do think that it's important to feel some form of calling towards something as powerful and quite honestly, like, it has the potential to be life-changing, and that can be in both directions.
Oh, yeah.
So I do think it's important that there is a calling there and that there is some form of like, okay, I really feel like my soul and my heart is telling me that I need to work with this medicine.
Yeah.
That if someone is thinking like, oh, you know, my friend is going on an ayahuasca retreat and they invited me to go and like, I don't really know if I want to, but like, I guess I'll do it.
Yeah.
I would be quite hesitant to go for that kind of reasoning. Because if someone is not ready for the shifts that can come with ayahuasca, it can be really, really challenging afterwards. And yeah. So there, it's really important, number one, to have the right intentions. And when I say right intentions, like there's no right intention necessarily, but like at least know your yeah. intentions, like know what it is that you're looking to work through, work with, change, transform, heal.
Yeah.
To understand your own intentions, to prepare properly for the ceremony, and then also to have the right integration support afterwards.
Mm-hmm.
Because one thing that I saw a lot was people who would come through and maybe this didn't happen very often, I will say that like most people had really, really solid intentions. But every once in a while, you would see somebody come through and it was almost more of like a curiosity, or the friend was doing it, or the boyfriend was doing it, or whatever. And those are the times where I really, really, really saw people struggle afterwards, because it was like they just hadn't come into it from a space of, yeah, of like it being a calling for themselves and it being yeah. like that kind of pure integrity. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Can we speak into, I do want to share my experience actually in a bit, but we'll get
to that. Oh my gosh, yeah, please.
How is the importance of integration? Like for somebody like that, I think it would be really nice to share some of the darkness, because with light, yes, it's powerful and it's beautiful, but there is always darkness. There is always sides to everything. So I think it would be really, I would love to hear how that can look through somebody that didn't have the right intentions or like rushed into it. Or was doing it because a friend was doing it.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So what, and we can get into like a whole conversation on integration. I'll speak to kind of what we're talking about, which is like if someone maybe didn't know the intentions or didn't do the preparation work or whatever it may be, or they came because X person was doing it too. And what I often saw in those situations was essentially the person would come and it could be really exciting. And in that moment, like in the space of the ceremonies, it really could be very profound.
Mm-hmm.
You know, a lot could come up for them, or they might gain a lot of realizations, you know, whatever it might be. That healing process could be initiated. But then afterwards, they go back to the exact same life, the exact same environment, circumstances, habits, you know, whatever it may be. And because beforehand, they didn't have any intentions to kind of be their anchor, because this is the thing, is like your intentions are your anchor mm-hmm. in the ceremony and after the ceremony. It's like something for you to hold on to when things get challenging and when things get rough, or when you go back into the old circumstances that, you know, were your life before.
Mm-hmm.
And so for these people, it was like they went back into exactly what life was previously, and they didn't have anything to hold on to. They didn't have anything to look forward to anchor them. And so it just fell back into what it was before. However, like sometimes it was even more challenging because these realizations had come up, but they didn't know how to move through them, or they didn't know, what do I do with this? They didn't have the support system, or they didn't have the tools. And that's a really big piece too, is because there are like some really powerful tools you can work with.
Yeah.
So it was just like, it kind of went back into what life had been before, and things didn't necessarily shift. And that might be okay. You know, like we also don't always have the perspective of what might happen in the future. And so just because they've come back to life as it was and things seem to settle back into the same space, that is not to say that things won't shift and evolve years down the line. Because I think that once we have worked with something like ayahuasca, we are always working with the changes that come. So
yeah,
again, it like goes back to perspective.
Yeah, because my experience with ayahuasca was very different to my perception of what ayahuasca was. And I try to be quite open-minded. Like, I didn't go in with expectation. However, I learned afterwards that there were unconscious expectations just through the conversations that I've heard, through the language around it, that is around where I live.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm sure other people have heard this kind of thing too, which is, I mean, it does cure depression. Like, people have had life-changing experiences and they go in and see all of this light and have very transformative experiences in the ceremony, right? For me, it wasn't like that at all. It was like, I mean, I do quite a lot of meditation, yoga. So I have experience, not obviously with the plant medicine of ayahuasca, but like that kind of transformational out of body spiritual downloads and experiences. So it wasn't new to me. So I was just meeting this medicine and she told me some fucked up stuff. Like, it was not pretty. It was not love and light. And it was like, okay, like,
what? Shit.
Like, what? Like, for me, it was a lot of past life stuff coming up. And I mean, honestly, I left being like, what was that for?
Yeah.
What, like, and not, obviously, I know that there was a purpose, but I just really want to raise the conversation that, because I've ever since speaking about this to other people, they're like, it's quite common that it's an introduction. Like, it's a spirit and a medicine, that there isn't a one-time cure everything. It is a freaking lifelong journey.
Oh my God, yeah.
Like, so, yeah, to me, that was super profound to afterwards to speak to people and be like, yes, that's really common. You've just met her. Like, this is her meeting you and her greeting you, and this is the start of your relationship. And it's just so different to how people speak about it at home.
Mm. Oh my God, you touched on so many pieces, actually. I'm like, where do I start? Yeah. So first, I will say, you said this perfectly. Ayahuasca is not a cure-all. Like, if someone goes into a ceremony or multiple ceremonies with ayahuasca thinking that she is just going to cure everything and like heal everything, that is not how it works. Ayahuasca is a tool. Ayahuasca is a guide, a teacher that can definitely be a really powerful catalyst for us to see what needs to be healed, to view things from a different light, from a different perspective, and maybe have deeper understandings of where we need to go from there. But it's, yeah, it's not like, okay, I had my ayahuasca retreat, like everything is amazing. And like you said as well, you touched on the expectation piece, and that is so important because we're human. It's really, really hard not to go into any situation without expectations. Relationships, a new job, like just all of these things, it's really hard not to have expectations. But when it comes to an ayahuasca retreat, that if you can drop your expectations, it is going to make life a lot easier. Because it just, it never, we never know what it's going to look like. And not only are our ceremonies not going to probably look like the other people's ceremonies, or, you know, if you're watching all these videos on YouTube and you're trying to figure out what ayahuasca is all about, like your situation, your experience might look nothing like that. And not only that, but you might not have the same experience as some of your past experiences if you've worked with the medicine before. So it's just super, super important to drop the expectations and have the intention, right? Like for sure have the intention to kind of grasp onto as an anchor, like I said before, but even let go of the expectation that that is going to be touched on, because it might not be. Like, oh my gosh, I've had that so many times. And we kind of said at the retreat center, like ayahuasca gives you what you need, not what you want.
Yeah.
And we don't always, we might have an intention, and that might not actually be what is going to serve our highest good in that moment. And ayahuasca might have a different perspective on that. So yeah.
It's just a piece of the puzzle, like your intention, because I think there's so much to say around people. This is so deep, this topic. But we think, most people think that, you know, we know what's best for us, that we know the steps, that we know the answers, but really we have no idea. So you can set your intention, and maybe you don't have expectations, or maybe you have unconscious expectations of, you know, I'm going to get the answers to this. Mm. And you will, but it will be in a way that might be completely different to what you thought. It might be something completely out of the box to the topic that you were going in with. And it is always related, because you do always get what you need. Mm. And I guess that's where the integration comes in, because if you don't know how to integrate that back to your intention, it's just like, what is happening? I've heard of some people going really into bad places after it, and I think it's just missing that link of going, actually everything is serving me, even if it doesn't make sense, this is serving me. And I just had this download come through that maybe there's people listening that have had that bad, I don't like using that word, but the experience that wasn't the way that they wanted it to be, and it was actually still perfect. So if you're listening to this and you've just got that, like, oh my God, I've wasted that experience, like, it was still valuable and it still helped your healing journey.
Yeah. And like you said, it's perspective. We might not be able to see it in the moment that it's happening, and we might not even be able to see it in the days or weeks or months that follow. And I know that it's so funny, because there really are some people who will sit with the medicine like ayahuasca, and it is truly just love and light, and it's beautiful, and it's like, you know, the most heavenly experience. I remember, I'll tell like a really quick story,
because
it's so funny. I can't remember if I told you this, but I remember one ceremony in particular that was just rough for a lot of people. It was like purging and just bringing it all. It was like a very collectively challenging experience. And the next day in group share, we were all going around, and it was like, oh, you know, I was in the depths of hell. I was like being blended in a blender all night long. Like, yeah. And then everyone's just sharing this like traumatically challenging experience. And then it gets to this one guy who, he looks really guilty. Like, he's kind of looking down, like doesn't want to say anything. And it's like, okay, you know, Jack, like, how was your experience? And he was like, I was snowboarding on rainbows all night long. And it was like, great, good for you. But some people, that is their experience. And I was like, oh man, I am so happy for you. Snowboarding on rainbows. Yeah, that actually, of course, sounds like an amazing time. But yeah, like a lot of people have really, really challenging experiences with ayahuasca, and it can get quite dark and like I think that there's such a negative connotation around the word dark. And it's kind of like how you said you don't like to say bad. When I say dark, I don't even necessarily mean that that is bad.
Yeah.
It's just dark. And there is something to dig into when it comes to our own dark. Like, darkness is not a bad thing.
No.
There's actually a lot of really profound healing that can come from darkness. And we're just afraid of it because we don't really understand it. Like, we can't see what's there. So it's scary. But that's where it becomes really, really important to have this piece of integration. Because like you kind of touched on, I have seen people go through these experiences with plant medicine, have the dark, challenging experiences, and then possibly be in a, I don't like to say worse off space, but like they don't know what to do with it afterwards.
Yeah.
And it can be really, really challenging. And I've seen people struggle with that for a long time. And I think this is like a really important piece to touch on. Like, I don't believe that ayahuasca is for everyone. And I've been asked this question before, like, should I take ayahuasca? Is ayahuasca for everyone? You know, it's this powerful teacher and this powerful healer. But I don't think this is necessarily talked about enough in this space. But like, I really believe very strongly that there is something to be said for like mental health in the space of plant medicines. And we have to be careful, because as someone who, like, my mental health has always been stable enough and I've been able to work through stuff with yoga, with meditation, different things like that, I definitely had experiences where ayahuasca really put me like to my edge. And it was a very, very fine line between like, did I go a little too far this time with this medicine? Like, where do I go from here? I've never touched this kind of space of my mental health being like this before. And thank God I had the experience with yoga, with meditation, with other integration practices. So I kind of was able to take care of myself in that way. But not everybody has those tools. And yeah, like when it comes to mental health, I think there's much more of a conversation that needs to be had around these types of medicines, because it's not just like, oh, you have anxiety, you have depression, like ayahuasca will be the cure. It can go in different directions, and that needs to be talked about. Yeah.
Yeah, I'm super glad that you brought that up, because I think I even posted something like months and months ago before I opened myself up to really experiencing it and challenging my beliefs. But I still really believe that. I've like had pretty bad mental health in my life. And my experience with ayahuasca really pushed me to that edge.
Mm-hmm.
And I left going, I am so grateful that, you know, I am a mentor. I know how to coach myself. I have the tools to move through this. And I just imagined if somebody didn't, it would be so much worse than not having experienced it. So yeah, I'm really glad that you said it's not for everyone. And I think like there shouldn't have FOMO for not doing it. Like it's big stuff. And if you do have,
yeah,
because I have heard, I mean, it does happen that people have had it and it's cured their depression and they're happy forever.
Yeah, for sure.
Mm-hmm. And the opposite happens.
Yeah. So, I mean, I think that is another reason why it's so important, going like all the way back to when you first said, like, should you have a calling?
Yeah.
And I think that that's definitely an important piece there, is to like really trust and honor yourself. If you're unsure, really check in with yourself to feel if it is the right time, the right space, the right circumstances, all these different things. Because, yeah, I mean, it can be profoundly, profoundly healing, but it's not necessary. Like, there are so many beautiful tools. And I think at the end of the day, like, all of the medicine that we need, we have it inside of ourselves. Yeah. And there are amazing tools and amazing teachers that we can work with if we want. And
yes,
it is a tool. Yeah, but, like, we don't have to look outside of ourselves.
No. I think I said that like this experience for me, journeying with plant medicines and being in Peru, has actually reinforced to me how important meditation is. Mm-hmm. Like how important it is to just sit with yourself and process everything. Because even after the journey, that's what you do. That's what you do to connect back to it. Like it's still inside of you. Actually, yeah, because there's I've been spending a lot of time in Peru. I'm still in Peru. It's amazing. But there are a lot of people that, you know, kind of cling to it and they keep going back for another ceremony. Mm-hmm. But like you touched on it earlier, which is that it's always with you. Like you can just meditate and connect back to it.
Mm.
And it's still there, right?
Oh my gosh. And you touched on like a really big piece is just this idea that like sometimes we have to be so careful with these medicines because it can actually become another form of escape
Mm-hmm.
and of constant seeking. And yes, of course, I think that there's like this beautiful process where we can continue to heal and transform and evolve. And that's like an ongoing, beautiful process. But when it's kind of like the mindset around it. Like when we get too caught up in this belief that like, I have to keep healing. I need to clear all of my past life trauma and clear all the karma. And it's like, I'm never good enough. I need to keep healing. And it's this constant seeking, seeking, seeking to the point of never actually being content with where you are in that moment.
Yeah.
Like that's something that we have to be really careful with. And there's a balance to be found there. And I've definitely seen that in the ayahuasca space where it's like hundreds of ceremonies. And you have to kind of wonder at that point, like, what are you still looking for? What are you still trying to find? What are you still trying to uncover? So yeah, it's interesting.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I mean, I didn't ask them how many of them, but I've definitely seen those characters. And coming from a background of yoga and meditation, it's kind of like, you just want to go, like, you don't need it to continue your journey. Yeah.
And for some people, that might be their life calling, you know? So I obviously don't want to like put everybody into one bubble.
Yeah.
It's truly like for some people, they feel so deeply connected to ayahuasca as a teacher that it's almost like working with a coach.
Yeah.
Where they're like, you know, once a year, but it is coming from like a really pure intention and it feels good.
Rather than needing to do it for healing it. I want to learn more about this. I want to dedicate my life to this. Mm-hmm. It's a completely different energetic. To me, that feels completely different.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Yeah, it's the energy for sure. Yeah.
Yeah. So what do you think the potential benefits are to doing it and for your growth and all this stuff, ayahuasca in particular?
Yeah. I mean, it's interesting. So I'll share like really quickly what the most common reasons I actually saw people come to work with ayahuasca, like what those were.
Yeah,
because I feel like it was like four or five that were really the most prominent, right?
Well,
because we would have people, essentially like everyone would come and before the week started, they would come into the space with us, with the facilitators and the shamans, and they would share what their intentions were. Mm-hmm. So obviously I won't give like specific example in terms of—
No names.
Yeah, no names. But if I really was to look at like the common themes, for sure, I would say one of them was to heal some sort of past trauma.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes people knew what that was and sometimes they didn't. Like sometimes it was just this knowing of something has happened and I don't know what it is, but I know that it needs to be released. I know that it needs to be healed. So like a healing, a trauma, something around or along those lines, that was a really common one. And then also just the space of anxiety and depression. And this is like a whole another conversation in and of itself, but I really believe very strongly that the reason that so many people are experiencing this kind of anxiety and these feelings of depression and loneliness or like all these things is because of disconnection. I think we're really disconnected from ourselves, from nature, from others, like people, our community, and even just like something greater than ourselves. And it doesn't matter what that is for someone. If it, you know, it could be God, it could be just like your higher self, like whatever your spiritual beliefs are, but just something greater than ourselves. And yeah, I just think we're super, super disconnected. And that is where this sense of sadness, anxiety, fear, all these things, like that's where it's coming from.
Mm-hmm.
So I saw a lot of people come through to heal that. And well, yeah, we can get into that. There's like so much there. But Another really, really big one I would say is like clarity, seeking clarity. So maybe it was people looking for their purpose in life. Mm-hmm. Like they feel really unsure about what they're meant to be doing in the world or how they are meant to be like sharing their gifts or what that even looks like. And so, or clarity around like their next steps. Maybe there's something, a big change happening in their life and they don't know if they should end a relationship or what, you know, career-wise they should be doing. So clarity, I would say, or purpose was a really, really big one as well.
Okay.
And then the next, or maybe, yeah, the last one I would say is like just spiritual discovery.
Mm-hmm.
Sort of like a curiosity, a desire to understand more the universe and even beyond the universe. Just like, what is all of this? What's really happening? So yeah, it was just like this spiritual seeking and desire to understand deeper everything. So those were like the main ones.
Wow.
That I really saw in terms of like why people were there.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And do you think people got their answers generally?
It's so all over the place because also like time is not linear at all. And so of course there were examples and there were situations where I saw people come in, they had a really, really specific intention or they were looking for a very clear answer. And they maybe they got it. Like I saw people who within the first ceremony or if they were there for a week, like the answer was there. They were clear. They knew how to move forward. I saw some people where it was kind of like, okay, the answer was there, but there was a lot of steps to be taken beyond that point, right? So it was like an unfolding of a process. So I would say some people really did get their answers quite quickly. And like in that ceremony, in that week, sure. Like, yes, it can happen. I think when it came to the people who were more so seeking like healing, like it's a process. It's an ongoing process. And like we said before, ayahuasca is not a one-time like quick fix. It's not an overnight pill. So it gets the momentum going and it gives you a deeper understanding of maybe what direction you need to take. The other thing that's really powerful with ayahuasca is it actually like it literally rewires your neural pathways in your brain.
Sure.
So it does provide the chance for you to like essentially have a fresh start coming from a different perspective. But what's so important there is that then you move forward with the tools and the practices to keep that going, because if not, like the brain is just going to kind of reset itself. Yeah. So yeah, it was all over the place. But like I've seen people heal from a week with ayahuasca years later, right? Like it's just this ongoing evolution and this ongoing process. Like I am still integrating and I'm still learning from and receiving guidance from, or like things are still happening for me from ayahuasca ceremonies that I had years ago. So it's just like you never know when it ends.
And you touched on so many great things just then, which I want to ask you about the neurological pathways, because that was a question I have, because I do a lot of that.
Oh, yeah.
And so I was like, oh my gosh, I've been dying to ask you that.
Mm.
And also, it just keeps coming back to that. It's not a one-time fix, isn't it? Because even as you're talking, I'm like, I mean, we're all human. It's like, well, I want clarity. I want answers to what my relationships look like. I want answers to whether the job is the right job for me. And so it's really easy to cling and go, is this going to give me my answer? So are you saying like, no, not necessarily?
Yeah. Or by the way, it gives you the answer that you don't necessarily want. And this is like such a funny thing is sometimes people come in with, like seeking the answer to a question and maybe they get the clear answer and it's not what they want to hear. So yeah. We have to be open to the fact that it really like we just don't know how these things are going to unfold. And one quick thing that I want to say actually that like just sort of came to mind with that is, yes, ayahuasca can provide really profound answers to questions, understandings, whatever it may be. But it's always really, really, really important that we touch base with ourselves and really feel into like what is true for us. Because sometimes ayahuasca can be like a very tricky teacher. And I've had this happen for myself. I've seen this happen for other people where maybe we have a vision or maybe we receive a message or whatever. And it might not be that that is exactly what it means. Like, it could be more symbolism, or it could be more like almost like a test. And so it's just always really important that we, yeah, like touch back in with ourselves and ask, does that feel true? Just because ayahuasca tells you to do something or shows you something in the future, like, you still always have the choice within yourself. So yeah, it's just like really important.
You know,
yeah.
Well, I actually remember I had that experience too, and it wasn't true. What, like, truthfully, I was like a bit, but you say it's like a relationship. I was like, hey, why'd you tell me that? But it is, it's deeper than that. It is in symbolic, and it is healing, and it is opening, and it's just so not black and white.
Yeah. I again, it's like, I won't give names, but I knew someone who had a really, really frightening experience with ayahuasca where the medicine basically showed him that his daughter was going to die. And it showed him like the exact age that she was going to die, like how it was going to happen, all these things. And he was traumatized, understandably so, afterwards. And it was like this incredible fear for the next X amount of time that this was really going to happen. And it did not. It did not happen. The time passed, like when it was shown. But the realization that he came to from all of that was just that that truly was ayahuasca bringing up his deepest, like the deepest rooted fear that he had in his entire life, and forcing him to work through it, forcing him to experience it and feel it. And ayahuasca will do that. Like, sometimes our deepest fears are going to be brought to the surface, because it's like this whole idea of you have to feel it to heal it. Like, it has to, the only way out is through. And so that's, you know, sometimes the reason that we have these really dark or like what seems to be traumatic experiences with ayahuasca is because it's just being released. But that can be really challenging. But like, the understanding that that might be why it's happening can bring a little bit of relief, at least.
Yeah. And you don't know until afterwards. And I really like these, like, it happened not in the ceremony, like it was months or however long it was later that he learned the lesson. And it's just like that, it actually stays with you. The healing is continuous. You don't get all the answers in the moment. And you get the answers that you need, not that you want.
Yep.
Like, I've had similar experiences with meditation where, like, I remember like my first Vipassana course. And I spent the whole time like angry. It like brought up all of my anger. Like, when I was young, I had a lot of anger. So sitting for 10 days of meditation, I was furious, and I literally was like, I was nicer before I got here. What have they done to me? I didn't have this problem before. But it, like, now that brings up all the unconscious stuff for you to clear that it still exists. So, like, your fears, your anger, your hate, if you want to release it, it will come out and you will have to face it. And it sucks sometimes.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. But it's powerful. I mean, did you talk about the snow globe analogy?
No.
Okay, yeah. It's like, I've heard this before and it resonated so much, but it's like this idea that everything that we've experienced in our life, if we don't release it when we experience it, then it's stored in the body, right? This is especially when we're children. If we experience something that's traumatic before the age of 7, we truly do not have the ability to process it as a child. And so it is going to be stored in the body. And this can continue to happen into adulthood if we don't release things when we feel it or when we experience it. And the idea is that it's like a snow globe where all of these things that are stored in the body, they like settle, and they're settled at the bottom of the snow globe. And then when something happens that triggers us, it's like you shake the snow globe and everything just like, it all kind of like rises to the surface. But if in that moment, again, it's like if we don't release it, then it just settles back down again until the next time that we shake the snow globe. So that's the thing that can be really, really powerful with something like ayahuasca or some of these medicines, or even meditation or breath work and some of these things, is you can actually release it from the body. It can be so challenging, but it's like it's integral. Like, we have to release it, or it's just continuing to settle. With even more things that we're starting to like pull in. So yeah.
I love that. So it's like going in, choosing that you're intentionally shaking up the snow globe so that you're not just going to do it when somebody triggers you and then leash out on them. It's like doing it so that it can be cleared, so that it can be healed, so that you don't do it unconsciously.
Unintentionally. Yeah, exactly.
Actually. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And so, can you speak into the neurological changes happen with ayahuasca? Because I do so much before experiencing this beautiful plant medicine journey is unconscious mind work and reprogramming and all that stuff. And that does change us neurologically. So I'm so curious how ayahuasca works with our brains like that and how that helps us change physically.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I'm not a doctor or a scientist. So I can only speak to this from kind of like the more basic level.
Yeah.
But it's essentially the active component in, okay, so with the fact that the ayahuasca vine and the chacruna leaf are fused together to make this brew, the reason that it actually has to be the two plants is it's because they essentially activate each other. So the DMT that is in ayahuasca is activated by the chacruna leaf. Otherwise, like if we just consumed the ayahuasca vine, nothing would really happen beyond maybe like some medicinal healing. Okay. But yeah, the DMT is actually activated, and we have smaller sort of activations of DMT in our brain naturally. And this is something that can be activated through meditation. Like I'm sure this is something that you've read into as well. Like with meditation or with breath work, we can activate these more natural sources of DMT that we have in the brain. But the DMT in ayahuasca is what is actually going through and rewiring the neural pathways in the brain. So it's essentially like opening things up to have this kind of fresh start. And let's say that, you know, over the course of, well, it could, I mean, literally be your entire life, you have wired in and solidified certain ways of being, certain conditioning, certain habits, certain practices, even just like the way that you see yourself, and like what you believe to be true about yourself has become hardwired into your brain, into your system. And ayahuasca, it's like it breaks all of that open and it loosens it up for you to release what's been stored and then to bring in the new beliefs that are actually true.
Yeah.
Or that you want to choose to be true from that moment forward, right? Like not that it necessarily has to be true or not true, but like what you are choosing. So yeah. Yeah. So
rewiring, isn't it?
And that's exactly, that's the rewiring. And again, this is where it's like the integration is so important after that, because if the integration steps aren't there to solidify it and to really like hardwire that into your new state of being, it could potentially just kind of go back to the old wiring. Because the truth is, if that has been your way of being and your kind of belief system for so long, you know, it can be easy to fall back into that space. So it's super, super important to like stay with the practices moving forward. Yeah.
Yeah, so much easier to fall back to what's familiar, even though like you literally might have the most awakening moment and know that it's all bad for you. But I mean, I speak about this so much and like other things. It's just comfortable, it's familiar, even though you know it's bad for you. It's easier, so I think like the integration and also like surrounding yourself with people that are on that path or just having more conversations, mm-hmm. like reach out to the people. Like if you're in a world that you don't have those people around you, like find them and connect with.
Yes. Yeah. The connection piece is so, so, so huge. And this is actually what I saw to be like one of the key pieces in the entire equation. And ayahuasca, like for me personally, I would say the most profound gift that I've received from ayahuasca are the connections that I have made to people and the community that's been formed around that. And it just keeps growing. Like it's insane to me how years afterwards that continues to grow and evolve, and new connections, old connections that are like reunited. Like it's just really incredible. And I think that, yeah, this like connection piece to other people who, like you said, are on the same wavelength, who are able to like support you in the process, who have that kind of understanding, is so key. And yeah, if somebody doesn't have that in the town that they live in, or like, you know, maybe where they work, like to be able to make those connections, even if it's online, like even if it's through a community, it can be really impactful. Yeah.
Instagram is great. It's one of my favorite things about Instagram. Mm-hmm. That, like you can just
really.
Yeah. Like,
yeah.
I remember when I first started this, my spiritual path, and I mean, I was that person that I was didn't have people around me that were spiritual, really. And I would just started posting my yoga. I had created an actual private yoga page, blocked everyone I knew, and just started making new connections. I still literally connect with some of them regularly that have been following me for years.
Yeah.
And like they are friends, even though we've never met, we've never spoken offline, but like to have those conversations, to have people go, yes, that's, I feel you, I connect with you in that. So divine. I think it's needed.
Yeah, it is. It is 100%. Yeah. That's been like such a cool thing that when I started my YouTube channel recently, even though it is like just this baby little channel that's just started and just growing, I've connected with people on a very personal level and it's been so incredible. So yeah, I mean, I think there's, of course, there's pros and cons to like the online world and technology and all these things, but it again, it's like it always goes back to intention. Like if it can be used intentionally, you actually can form really beautiful connections with people. And maybe you've like never even met them in person. Yeah, it's interesting.
And it allows us to stay in touch, like truthfully.
Yeah.
You just said it so deeply. Like, I am so grateful to have met you, like beyond words. Like this podcast episode is just like a little cherry for you, for the people listening, for everyone on. But like far out, I am so grateful for out that I met you. And social media allows us to connect. Like you live Washington, US. And I'm going back to Australia, and I have no doubt that we will connect again.
I know.
I wonder if it would have been that easy before.
Well, think about it. Like, we would have connected in Kula, and then that would have been it. Yeah. I would have been like, hey, next to meet you. Yeah.
Yeah. I wouldn't have known you have that connection.
Exactly.
Friend from Krishna Village, because through social media. So, yeah, I do see, and this is like, yeah, the black moment, but I really see the benefits to, and to everything. Like, everything, like, even as, I also don't think dark is bad. So even though I feel like I got one of the darkest experiences that you can have with ayahuasca from what I've heard, and I still obviously it benefited me. It was exactly what I needed, and I don't feel resentment. I'm grateful that I feel really grateful. I don't know if this is perspective that people will relate to or not, but I feel grateful that because you get what you need and what you're able, you never get things that you're not able to handle. So by showing like the darkest thing that I couldn't imagine shown about myself, and to go, wow, I love that I'm at the space where I can hold that much light, that that's not going to destroy me, that that's something that I can take in me. Like it was almost a blessing to receive that, to go, well, you know, like you, like ayahuasca knows that I'll be okay receiving that. So I must hold so much light that that information isn't going to shake me. It shook me for like 24 hours and then I was fine.
Yeah.
And I think that's really beautiful, that everything dark is for your benefit.
And the trust piece in all of that is like, oh, it like is so powerful, because you really do have to have quite a strong faith and trust in yourself and in life that that is true. Like what you just said, you're not going to get more than you can handle.
Yeah.
Because sometimes, yeah, like you may be right. And this is with anything in life. Like you could be on the line where you're like, I don't know if I can do this. I don't know if I can take more than this. Like, how do I go from here?
Yeah.
Oh, it's just like trust and faith and knowing, like really knowing with clarity that it is going to shift. It is, this is not forever. Like if you're in one of those spaces of darkness, right? Like the light is on the other side of that and it's coming, and it's like a transmutation. I mean, it is literally like what you said, you were in holding that space of darkness because you have so much light in yourself that you're able to hold it. And that's it, like is exactly how it works. Mm-hmm. So yeah, I remember when I had my darkest experience with ayahuasca, it was, I mean, like I can't even put it into words other than being in the depths of hell and actually believing that I was trapped there for all of eternity. Like I truly in my mind believed that I was never coming out of it. And it was like just all of these, you know, feelings of isolation and being so like so just so alone that you like can't even put words to it. Fear and just like all the worst emotions you could possibly think of, it was just like all surrounding me. And that was my experience, and that was eternity for me. And it's so interesting because when I came out of it, it was like, how could that possibly serve me? I don't understand how that could be for my greater good. I don't understand, like, what was the purpose of that?
Yeah.
And there have been so many realizations that have come from that for literally years afterwards. But I remember one thing that I will never forget was like having a conversation with one of my best friends. And I was explaining this to her where I was like, I'd never felt so alone. I felt like I was never going to experience love again, connection again, like all of it was just gone. And she was like, Danielle, like that is what I have experienced in the depths of my anxiety and the depths of my depression. And that is just like life for me sometimes. Mm. I had never experienced that before. And so for the first time, I was able to actually be on the same page as this person that I loved and cared about, and wow. not even just like get it from a conceptual level, but I felt it. I knew what she had been through. I could empathize because I truly had been there. And like, yeah. So I think, you know, it can be super, super challenging, but for those of us who are going to be in this healing space, it can't just be love and light all the time. Because if it's always love and light, and then you're trying to connect with somebody who's like in the depths of their shit, like that's not what they necessarily, that's not going to form a connection that's going to be able to pull them through.
Yeah.
So yeah, it's like.
So yeah, that was super pivotal for you in your place as a facilitator, as a healer, to actually connect and have compassion, like on a level that you can't have compassion for somebody if you haven't really experienced what they're going
through. Like, yeah. Yeah. Or it's so easy. If you're someone who's always just been kind of in this love and light bubble, it's so much easier to be like, oh, come on, like just be positive. You know, this like spiritual bypassing that is this whole conversation.
Yeah. Actually, that's so much. I mean, we've kind of spiraled. I guess they do kind of come up a conversation together, but I was having a conversation with someone the other day about this, and people speak about depression like, I was sad and, I didn't feel, and I was like, no, like there was no door. There was no out. There was no light. There was no, if I do this, I'll feel better. It was just like dark. And I think until you've experienced that, like literally people can't make that connection until you really experience that. They'll be like, I've heard this many times. They'll be like, oh, but I knew I was going to come out of it. I'm like, well, that's not it.
Right.
Not the same thing. Because it's just not the same thing. And I think that's really, it's great that you were able to have that friend and that. Then that's the medicine as well, isn't it? The medicine giving you that friend to have that conversation to go, hey, this is why.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And that's why it's like literally a never ending. It's a constant. It's beautiful when you can have the trust and know that, oof, like you just have to have faith that the perspective will come with time. It starts to become kind of fun. You're like, okay, how is this going to play out? Now that I've gone through the fucking trauma,
like how bad can you get now? Like what's the next level?
Man, if I can make it through that, I can make it through anything. That's like super true. Yeah.
Literally. And you know what? That's what I think, like, I'm really grateful for the start of my life, which was pretty traumatic and all the fun things. But I'm like, I'm invincible now. Show me what you've got, ayahuasca. I think let's go. But it is beautiful and it is healing, and I think you said it, like as a space as a healer it's beautiful to be able to connect, like it's really beautiful. I think it's part of the human experience.
That's such a key piece, because like you know, it's so funny with these conversations, because you can be like, and then this, and then this, and then it keeps going, because like to be honest, I actually do believe, and this again, this is like personal opinion, right, but on a higher, like from a higher perspective, at the end of the day, I actually really do believe that it is all love and light. But we are having a human experience, and duality is a part of that human experience. Yeah. So I think that we have to be careful to not be like so much in the spiritual world and up in the clouds all the time that we can't remember to also acknowledge the human experience that people are having. And that's the importance of being grounded. Like that's the importance of some of these practices that keep us in our human body and connected to the earth and not just like up here all the time. Because that's where the disconnect can happen.
I'm super glad that you brought that up. Super glad, because it's a really common thing. And love feeling. Like, we chose to be humans. We chose to have feelings. I was just laughing before because I remember this, like, a memory popped in. I mean, it was, like, it's comical now, but I remember, like, it was maybe at the start of the year, and I was driving someone. I was, like, really sad. Like, I was, like, talking to someone talking to the spirits, and I was like, wow, this sucks. Like, I'm so upset. I can't remember what it was. But I just remember this voice coming in saying, yeah, you wanted to experience it. Like, you wanted to experience life. Like, you wanted to experience joy and sadness. And like, you wanted to experience it. And I was like, oh, okay. And then I just like stopped crying. And I was like, oh, you're right. Yeah, I guess it is all the feelings. I literally just stopped crying and I just understood. I was like, yeah. I like to bypass that and think that we need to come back to love and to come back to joy all the time. Like, totally isn't like, you cannot have one without the other.
Yeah. Yeah. Sometimes it feels really freaking great to have like a good cry when you let yourself just have it and fully go into it.
I love a cry. I am such as like, this is me when I go super stereotypical Scorpio. But sometimes when I see my closest friends, I'd be like, I just need to have a cry. And they'd be like, what about? And I'm like, nothing. I just need to cry.
Yep. And then somebody tries to hug you and you're like,
oh, yeah.
You're making me cry more.
Yeah. Oh, when someone tries to like make sense of it, they're like, what are you crying about? I'm like, yeah, I can understand. Like, they don't even make sense of me.
Oh, trust me, I understand.
Yeah. Oh, but okay, cool. So I want to loop it back. I feel like we've covered so much and answered a lot of questions that people might be having. I want to end it with a couple of questions.
Yeah, sure.
What would your advice be for someone that is wanting to do their first ceremony or wanting to start their journey with ayahuasca?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, so if somebody is like really genuinely feeling the call and it's like, this is the time, you know, I'm ready for it. The first, kind of like on a logistical level, the first thing is just making sure that you are going to be able to work with the medicine in a safe space and like a safe container, because there are a lot of opportunities nowadays because the medicine is becoming more popularized and all like, it's so tough because like whenever something becomes quote unquote trendy, there's going to be people who take advantage of the situation. And there are people who are like pretending to be shamans out there and all these things. So the space and the container is really, really important. So doing your research, looking into centers that, I mean, I would say honestly, like are well enough known that there are some reviews that you can read and you can kind of see what people's experiences have been. And like, even better if you know someone who's been to a center and you can get their personal experience. Making sure that they provide the right preparation support, making sure that they do proper medical intake calls, because that's huge. And then making sure that they genuinely offer integration support. Like, those are things to really look for. I would say also like, the group size, because some of these centers are doing ceremonies with like 60 and 80 people, and that's just insane. So ask about the size of the group. Yeah, it's crazy. I would say like, try to keep it under 20, like anywhere in that kind of ballpark. It depends on the person and what they want. Some people like smaller groups. Some people are okay with a little bit more. That kind of like 12 to 15 range is really awesome. But yeah, like anything around and under 20, I would say is like a good group size. And much more than that, you really have to start to be careful that people are being properly taken care of. Like finding the right center. And then from there, really just solidifying your intentions. And with intentions, it's really important to, because it's so easy to have like a million things. Like, I remember the first time I worked with ayahuasca, I had like 3 pages in my journal written out for intentions.
Off of forehead.
Oh my God, yeah. But it's hard to hold on to that in the space of ceremony. So it's like, let me bring back my
book. Ayahuasca's like, these ones contradict each other. What do you mean?
Yeah. Yeah. That's why she gave me the hell experience, because she was like, what the fuck was that? But just like a couple bullet points, literally, of either a word or a phrase, like short things that you can really hold on to and remember. That's important.
Yeah.
And then from there, and this is something that like, if somebody's working with the right center, they're going to get this information, but the dieta beforehand. And when I say dieta, I more so mean like a short diet, but also a kind of detox from things like technology and like just clearing your space of things that are energetically challenging, if you can, like making sure that you're not watching TV that's too triggering or listening to music that's like too much, or you just want to surround yourself with good energy essentially in the like days and weeks leading up to your ceremony and just eat good food. Like they'll provide you with the diet information, but yeah, it's like a full energetic cleansing before you work with the medicine. And it's like one thing that's really important for people to understand is you can start working with ayahuasca the minute you freaking commit to working with her as a medicine. So you do not have to drink the medicine itself. Like the second that you decide, I see this a lot when people sign up for the retreat or sign up for the ceremonies, things start to happen. Cleansing starts to happen. Purging starts to happen, like shifts and changes in their life. So just know that that can happen before you even drink the medicine.
Do you think, I swear to God, I first heard about ayahuasca maybe 3 years ago. And I swear to God, I was getting this downloads from her back then.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But yeah. I've heard of some crazy isn't the right word, but like literal purging before the medicine even began. Like before the...
That happened to me. Yeah. Literally. The night before I worked with ayahuasca for the very first time ever, I purged all night long. Like all night long. And I was so sick. I was like, oh my God, like I'm not even going to be able to drink the medicine. But right before the ceremony, everything just like... It was like I was back to normal. I felt great. And then I actually didn't purge in terms of vomiting ever again. Anytime that I ever worked with ayahuasca, I never, I purge in different ways. And there's a lot of different ways you can purge, which is a whole other conversation. But for me, it was more like yawning, like my body would kind of get like shakes and hot and cold, like temperature fluctuations. But yeah, there's like many different ways you can purge.
But you got it all out before it even started.
Apparently, yeah.
That is wild. Like, it is so weird. Magic. Like, you can't... It is, like, ethereal. Like, it's so spiritual and so deep and magic. And, like, mm-hmm. The fact that that happens is, like, real. Like, you're tapping into spirit. You're tapping into medicine. Like, really, really ancient medicine. And, yeah, that's... It's just so important to know that before you get into it, to really feel, like... This is real. It's not just a drug that you do and it solves your problems. Like, it is really ancient magic. That is a tool to help us. And it's cool we get to have access to it now.
Yeah, I mean, it's interesting because what you say kind of touches on the piece of, like, having the respect for the medicine is so, so important.
Mm-hmm.
And that, I think, also... kind of like determines what someone's experience is going to be. And not to say that if they don't, or if they do or don't have respect, that they're not going to have a bad experience. Cause again, it's like, there is no bad, but it can definitely affect whether or not you touch on the intentions that you want to touch on and these different things. And yeah, it's interesting because even like, if you talk to some shamans, some of the Shipibo shamans, they will actually say that ayahuasca herself as a spirit kind of came to them and said, like, it's time for this medicine to be taken out into the world. Like, now is the time. People need to work with this medicine. And so that's why things are kind of happening the way that they are, and is becoming more widespread, is because, like, people need to wake up. Like, we need to have a deeper connection to ourselves and a deeper connection to nature. And that's a huge thing that can come with ayahuasca, because she is nature. Like, you know, it is from, oh my God, like the Amazon. It doesn't get much more nature than that, more like Mother Earth.
Yeah.
So I think it was like a realization, literally from the spirit of ayahuasca, that there needs to be a really deep connection happening now. And it's like, it's the time.
Globally. Yeah, there is. I mean, you'd have to be living under a rock to disagree that there's a really big awakening happening right now.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And so, yeah, it's cool. Like, even connecting to plant medicine.
Mm-hmm.
Like, in a way that does open you up to nature more, like in a way that, yeah, because I think I was somebody that thought, like, we don't need it. I literally think I said, we don't need plant medicine. Like, you can access everything through our mind. Like, we produce DMT. We can access different dimensions through meditation. But you know what? There is something in connecting to a plant that's been on this earth for much longer than humans have.
Mm-hmm.
Has more knowledge than we do. But
yeah,
that respect that goes, yeah, like, you are wiser than I.
Like, and just like any way that we can connect to nature.
Yeah.
And for people who might not feel called towards something like ayahuasca, even just like working with herbs and working like gardening, being in nature, walking barefoot, like going on walks in the forest, or just like any way that you can connect to nature is going to be healing. And there are also plant medicines that are super, super gentle, like cacao, and things that are soft. Yeah, exactly. So there's like different things for different people, and there's no one way. This is the most important thing, is like there's not one path. So it's just what feels right and what resonates for you.
Yeah, you know what? Like walking through a forest barefoot, underrated thing ever. I think that's what I miss most about Australia, like just not wearing shoes.
Oh my God.
I think the first time I literally remember the moment, the first time I ever walked, because I grew up in Melbourne. Like, it's weird if you don't wear shoes in Melbourne, but it's like normal. No one wears shoes. Mm-hmm. And I stepped onto like, there's my favorite beach, it's like a forest by the beach. And I just like, my first two steps, I was like, oh my gosh, I'm connected to that. It was like the highest feeling ever.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's so healing and super, so grounding.
Yeah, which goes to just say back to like what we said at the beginning, which you don't need the medicine like to do things afterwards, like the integration. Like if you feel like you want to connect back to nature more, go connect to nature. If you want to connect to the plants, go put your hand on a tree and like connect to the tree. There is so much available to us.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, thanks so much for sharing everything. I feel like it's just such a great conversation.
I mean, I think it's, again, it just goes back to like, we are our own medicine. Like everything that we seek is already inside of ourselves. And so, yeah, if you're someone who feels called to working with some of these plant medicines, amazing. Trust yourself. If not, amazing. There's so many things that we can do that is available to us, like, from our own body. Our own body is so, so incredibly powerful. So like, yeah, the breath work, the meditation, like sound. And I know we have talked about this like super briefly, but this is something that I want to get into a lot more, is just like using your own voice as the most healing instrument that exists on this planet. So, you know, vocal activation, toning, like there's so much that we can do with our voice and our breath and things like this to heal. So that's like, having worked with so much of this plant medicine, that's kind of what it's brought me to, is like, okay, now I really realize just like how much power is already within. And so that's the direction that I'm leaning towards more. But yeah, it's going to be very cool to explore.
Yeah. You know, I've had such a journey with voice as well. It's actually the reason I started this podcast to expressing more. And I started singing, and like, there is so much power in it. I'm so excited to see what you create. That space, like, it's so important, like singing your own with your own voice. I used to have so many blockages around even like singing, hearing me.
Same.
You too.
Definitely. It's very vulnerable, and it's, you don't even have to be a singer, right? Like if somebody's listening to this and they're like, oh, but I'm not a singer, that is not what it's about. It is about literally freeing your own voice, and that can be done in so many different ways.
Mm-hmm.
So, and the thing I think that's really interesting about like vocal activation, toning, using the voice as healing, is a lot of times when we're working with things outside of us, so plant medicine, even like sound healing, if someone else is doing it, right, playing bowls or gongs or whatever, it can activate things within us, and possibly, not that this is always the case, but possibly maybe take us to a point that we're not quite ready for. But with our own voice, that is never going to happen. Like your own voice is never going to take you to a place that you're not ready to explore, that you're not ready to heal, because it's literally you. So it knows your boundaries. It knows what you're capable of. So yeah, I think that that's like such a powerful piece of that whole equation as well.
That's super powerful. I love that. You know, mine was actually at Krishna during kirtan.
Yeah.
That I started doing this expression of work.
Same. I just bought a Shruti box, which is almost like a little harmonium, but it doesn't have the keys. Oh. So it's like really good for toning. Yeah. So you can play the Shruti box and it has like the pump, like a harmonium. Yes. And you just use it to tone your voice. And yeah, I'm super excited for that.
Amazing. Oh, so much expansion. And I'm so excited to hear what comes from this and like what you get to do. And yeah, thank you so much for sharing this conversation. I'm really, like, it was so fun. This is what, oh my gosh, our conversations just look like. We just got to share it with the people. And
it's just a casual Tuesday, you know?
That conversation. Yeah, no. And I hope if anyone has any other questions about it, like, please feel free to send them through and send them to Danielle, or we can answer them or whatever that you need. Like, the support is here. Should you or would you want it? And this is just the beginning. This is just one of the many billions of conversations that can be had around this stuff.
I know. I feel like there's going to be a future podcast based on all the questions that would probably come from this.
I know. Like, we didn't even touch into the rest of the plant medicine, like, or the other.
Oh my gosh. Mm-hmm. Oh yeah. There's like whole separate conversations based on all of the other things.
Yeah. Yeah. That's a podcast episode for each one. This just becomes a plant medicine podcast. No, that's not.
Aw, but yeah, thank you so much. It makes me so happy to just be able to reconnect, and it is like the conversation flows so freely. So I love that. I appreciate that so much.
My pleasure. It's the space. I mean, it's just to open people's minds and to have conversations that people aren't normally open to. So thanks for being a part of that.
My goodness. Yeah, thank you.
All right. Well, I'll add your social links in the description. So if anyone wants to contact you, they can find you. And I'll add your new YouTube channel as well, Ryan. We'll post this visual up. So you guys, if you want to see us talking through Zoom, you can, and connect with us that way. Otherwise, thank you so much for listening, and thanks for joining me, Danielle.
Oh, I love you so much. Thank you. It was such a pleasure.